Fatherless Fanny by Anonymous. Chapter 24. Painful Suspense. It is time now to return to Miss Stanhope and the Duke of Albemarle, for whose nuptials every preparation went on with the utmost celerity. To have seen Amelia in the midst of the crowd of milliners, dressmakers, jewelers, etc., etc., that daily surrounded her, giving orders for the various articles of finery necessary to render her bridal pomp complete, nobody would have imagined that she was determined never to fulfill the contract for which she was preparing. Indeed, that she had already put it out of her power to do so. It is impossible to describe the anxiety of mind which the Duke of Albemarle suffered during the continuance of this suspense. For notwithstanding Miss Stanhope's promises to render the scheme of the marriage abortive, and her injunction to him to rely implicitly upon her faith, he could not divest himself wholly of doubt and distrust, and he would most assuredly have disclosed the truth to his uncle, had his own safety alone been endangered by so doing. The Duke of Albemarle was naturally open and candid, and the part so full of duplicity which he had undertaken pained him exceedingly. Conversing one day with Lord Summertown on the subject of his approaching marriage with Miss Stanhope, he became suddenly perplexed, his color heightened, and his hesitating accents betrayed the perturbation of his breast. His uncle, perceiving his confusion, and attributing it to his reluctance to marry Miss Stanhope, although he did not suspect his nephew of any intention to deceive him, regarded him with a stern look, and speaking in that undertone which is so expressive of deliberate malice, he said,
"Whatever may be your thoughts, Henry, on the union I have decided upon, tell them not to me, and beware how your actions betray a design to oppose my wishes. You are in the toil of the fowler, and cannot escape the meshes that enclose you. You will perhaps tell me you despise poverty, and are fearless of my displeasure. But answer me, boy, can you brave death? Not your own death, but the extinction of that painted butterfly you dote upon?"
The Duke involuntarily shuddered.
"Yes," continued Lord Summertown, "that insect is in my power, and I tell you she dies, instantly dies, should any act of disobedience on your part call down my vengeance upon her. I now leave you to your own decision. One step, one single step of yours will hurl your minion to destruction."
Lord Summertown did not wait for the Duke's answer, but instantly quitting the room, left him to the meditations his horrible speech had excited. It is impossible to describe the Duke's feelings. Scarcely, indeed, could he analyze them himself. Such a mixture were they of anger and apprehension, indignation and anguish. Like a lion struggling in the toils of the hunter, his rage could only be equaled by his grief at the total subversion of his power. In regard to Lord Summertown's assertion that he held Fanny in his power, the Duke, however, flattered himself that it was made only with a view to alarm him. The protection of Lady Maria Ross, he judged, was too respectable to admit any doubt of her actual safety, at least for the present. But he knew the cruel, vindictive temper of his uncle too well to doubt that he would find some mode of revenging himself upon that hapless girl, at some future opportunity, should any action of his nephew's seem to authorize the proceeding. Thus circumstanced, the Duke was under the necessity of committing himself to the guidance of Amelia, and to await, in trembling expectation, the result of her scheme for dissolving the union. It was equally necessary that he should assume such an appearance of tranquillity as was very foreign to the feelings of his heart, but which was indispensable if he hoped to impose upon his uncle. The time, however, approached with rapid strides, and no action of Miss Stanhope seemed to authorize the hopes she had given. A thousand doubts disturbed the mind of her appointed bridegroom, who suffered without daring to complain. She saw, but took no notice of his sufferings, without it was to add to them by some little flippancy, some question relative to a future arrangement that was made with such an air of seriousness as never failed to give added poignancy to his already irritated feelings. She would then laugh at his doleful looks, as she called the appearance of anguish, that in spite of his best efforts would steal over his features, while suffering under the tortures of prolonged suspense. "Your grace gives me but a melancholy prospect," she said one day, "when I try to peep over the matrimonial pale, by picturing to myself the felicity of our future conjugal tête-à-têtes. That long face of yours would make an excellent model for a bust of Trophonius. I dare say a week of your company will have as good an effect upon my vivacity as a visit of the same length to the cave of that laughter-quelling gentleman. Depend upon it, I shall never even smile again after the holy noose is tied. So excuse me for making the best of my time now." And away ran the giddy girl, laughing at the poor Duke's distress in the most unmerciful manner. At the signing of the marriage articles, the Duke of Albemarle expected that Amelia would make the promised declaration of her aversion to the proposed marriage. But to his unspeakable disappointment and surprise, Miss Stanhope appeared in more than usual spirits on the occasion, and introduced a gentleman to witness the deed by his signature, to whom she said she had promised that honor in a frolic one day, and who now claimed the fulfillment of her promise with an earnestness she could not repress. Her guardian and Lord Summertown yielded to what they supposed a giddy whim, and Sir Edward Mornington, for he was the gentleman, wrote his name where the lawyers directed him. Nor did the Duke of Albemarle perceive any irregularity in the placing of the other names, although his grace appeared to be poring over the fatal instrument longer than any other person present. I will not pretend to describe what were his feelings when 12 o'clock the next day was fixed upon for his nuptials, nor attempt to delineate the agonized expression of his features when, as he was leading Miss Stanhope into the drawing-room after the signature of the articles, she said in a half-whisper, "I have succeeded even beyond my hopes. My happiness is now insured, and I hope tomorrow will appear to your grace, as it does to me, the harbinger of love and joy." The Duke endeavored to make an answer, but the words died upon his lips, for as he looked up, he perceived his uncle observing him with fury sparkling in his eyes. And as he passed him, uttered these words in an undervoice, "I see your reluctance, your ungrateful delinquency, but beware. Remember, you are passing sentence upon your minion." End of chapter 24.